This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 38, Dragon Box. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a cold but kind of partly cloudy day in Durham, North Carolina. Ready for an exciting, and we mean exciting show here at Games at Work with my co-host, Michael Martin.
Hooray! Hello, Michael. I'm glad to be here, too. It's a little on the chilly side here in Budapest as well. A little on the cloudy side and starting to get dark, which is what it does about this time of day. But it's lighter now than it used to be.
Woo-hoo.
So I'm happy for that. But you're right. We do have an exciting show today, and we've got a couple of topics
that are enthralling
for various reasons.
Yes.
So the first one is one that you found, and so let me let you have the honors of introducing it.
Yeah, so this one's actually pretty simple, right? And found is a little of an over-description. It was handed to me on a silver platter while listening to another podcast where someone just casually mentioned a iPad game called Dragon Box Plus. And, you know, I haven't bought it because it's a $6 game, and what the game does is really, really cool conceptually. So we'll have a video of it in the show notes with a little kid actually playing the game. But what this is it's a card game where you have the Dragon Box, which you want to isolate on one half of the playing field. And by doing so, you have a set of cards. There's a set of cards on the field, and you match cards in order to remove cards from the field, ultimately to the point where you have one card on one side of the field, the Dragon Box. Now, what this really is a game that teaches the basics of algebra. And if you think about some of the basic techniques in mathematics for algebra, things like cancellation, right? Where you want to do something on both sides of an equation to isolate x. And in this case, the way the game progresses, and I think there's 100 levels or something like that, is as the kid plays, all the cards, which might be, a panda or, some other creature, ultimately change over the progression of the game into numbers and letters, so that you are teaching them the concepts and basics of algebra as a fun game to start with, and ultimately as a real way of doing algebra, the basics of algebra. And, the target age for kids is around 6 to 8 years old.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm reminded of the Homer Simpson phrase, "You lied to me through song," because it kind of applies to this, that you're teaching kids how to play a game, which will in turn teach them in a very sneaky manner a skill that will be very useful to them.
Well, the nice thing is it's not that sneaky. When you actually go to the website, it says right up front, this game will teach kids how to play algebra, right?
Well, okay, so I take that back. I was sneaky with my kids to let them play this game, which is exactly what I did.
So they have played it.
I bought the game.
Oh, cool. That's what I was hoping, that you would be the person to talk about a real game that you paid money for on the iPad.
Well, yeah, I paid real money for it because the reviews and discussion that I heard in addition to your one-liner email, which intrigued me.
We must talk about Dragon Box. It's like, Dragon Box? Ah, is that like the art of the dragon? Is that, Okino Kamae? What was it? I was like, oh, no. It is a game. It's an iPad game. It's like, oh, now I get it.
So, yes, I bought it. I installed it last night. And I told my two children, hey, you guys are going to be allowed to play a game before bed.
Yes.
Yes, yes. So the gameplay of this is rather intriguing because it is teaching basic algebraic techniques of needing to keep in balance. So if you add something to one side of the equation, you must add it to the other side of the equation. And you can create what they call knight cards, not like KN, rather like NI. And these knight cards.
So not Knigget, but knight.
Bring me a Chardonnay. So, yeah, right. So the deal with a knight card is it's essentially a negative. So if you have a slug and you have the knight card for the slug, the knight card plus the day card of the slug turns into they cancel one another out and they're done. And what's really cool too is that the game, which has what's our pigs game? You know, flying pigs.
Bad Piggies? Or Angry Birds?
Or any of these games with Angry Birds, Bad Piggies,
all the
Angry
Rovio
Birds
stuff.
Star. Yeah, they all have 1, 2, or 3 stars for completing a level. Same thing plays in this game, too. You get 1, 2, or 3 stars. So if you leave away on one side of the equation a couple of things that should cancel one another out, you know, like a night slug and a day slug, the game will let you know that you have left useless junk on the board. That's what they call it, useless junk. So
unlike the useful junk that I have in my office.
Yes, which you know, if you put it all in a box and you sent it off, you know, you might actually be able to get money from Gazelle.com.
They, you know, they could be a sponsor of our show if you tell your friends to start listening.
And and use offer code GAMESATWORK2. I let them play. So I have my 6-year-old and my 9-year-old, and I said, you guys can play. So first of all, my 6-year-old was really upset that my 9-year-old was able to play first.
And how dare he?
Yeah, I know. That was rough. And then there was another problem because it was getting to be bedtime. It's like, but I didn't get a chance to play. You got to play. Blah, blah, blah. So the 6-year-old actually was grasping a couple of the more advanced concepts pretty quickly here too.
Pretty cool.
Which I thought was pretty slick. So each of them now has an avatar for the game. Each of them has progressed a bit, and I told them that they can play a little bit more. So I was the sneaky guy who said, here's a fun game that you can play. And what's very nice cool about it is that the game gives feedback and you can try things and it doesn't, you know, smack you across the hand and say, no, that's wrong. It's encouraging to you. It gives you your stars and it allows you to progress through the levels, which I think this is a fabulous, fabulous example of the iPad turning into the kind of learning tools that have been envisioned in Neal Stephenson's novels, which we've also talked about before.
Well, I do remember seeing something recently that iTunes U has surpassed the 1 billion download mark.
Yes.
Yeah, really driven by iPad sales and universities engaging in education. That's, you know, formal education process. But I am so glad to hear that your kids are playing this game. And I would like to, you know, maybe we check in a couple of weeks. Let's see how long the game is sticky to refer back to our last episode on game stickiness.
Well, it'll be interesting to see because there's a couple of factors here. Number one, it's on my iPad, and my iPad is not a toy for my children.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. That's how I roll. So the question is going to be, might we put it on a different iPad too and see about allowing that to get played there instead of on my machine? But then that means that my oldest boy or my wife's iPad will become the vehicle for this. And I'm not sure that either one of them are going to be keen to give up their machines either. So I love this. I think it's the right kind of concept. iPads are great for consumption activity. But as a game, this is a nice interactive learning activity that I think is right square where it ought to be. The bigger question is, thinking about your iTunes U point, is might this be one of the things that becomes more and more marketed to schools as opposed to enrichment activities for parents to buy on behalf of their children.
Yeah, that's an interesting interesting question. I think the short answer is yes and, right? I don't think it's a yes but. I think, you know, if you think about, you know, market segmentation and sales models and all that fun stuff, you in this case, you don't want to say, I'm only going to focus on, but I'm going to add an additional channel of, you know, marketing these types of games to schools, as well as to engaged parents who want to get their kids a jump start on learning some of these types of concepts.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. And the one of the criticisms of iPads in the past has been is that they are not creation devices. You really need something with more horsepower to do content creation. I mean, sure, you can write something on an iPad, and sure, you can draw something with paper or a variety of different other solutions. But how do you get the not just the interaction, but then the creation and creative activity moving forward with the iPads? This doesn't do that. This is still a learning activity and content consumption. But another interesting thing that I'm eager to learn more about is how iPads can be used for more creation of work product, especially at the school, elementary, university levels.
Well, you know, we shared an app amongst ourselves the last week or so. Gosh, and I'm going blank on the name, but I have it here on my iPhone. I'm just going to pull it up real quick. My Script Calculator. Would you consider that consumption or creation?
I think it's consumption. It's not creation. You're not creating new content. You're solving equations.
Yeah. See, this is where I think it gets mushy. You're not really consuming your calculator.
You're using it.
You're using it. So there's use, consumption, and creation. Because I can create a formula and send it to you.
Yeah, okay. So let's take this little test, shall we?
I think we shall.
You have the iWorks suite for your iPad.
Yes.
How many presentations have you created solely on your iPad?
I have created multiple presentations solely on my iPad. The challenge that I have is in my day job, our BYOD policy requires me to put software on my mobile devices that I do not want to install, so I cannot use those devices for work, but I can create and have created presentations on my iPad that I have used in very public settings.
For other purposes. Okay, for other purposes. Okay.
So, I think that's a... It is perfectly viable to do that within certain constraints, right? When I have a lot of text to do, I will do that on my Mac. But I have generated many posts on various blogs using the WordPress software on my iPad.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair. I mean, I've started to use my iPad a little bit more for that sort of thing. For me, it's a great second screen, and it is a place where I can do at least some email content creation. But I'll have to tell you, I can't think. I mean, I haven't installed the applications, but I would not go to those applications to go work on a presentation, to go work on a document, et cetera. It's just not part of my
I would
reference.
Absolutely use it, because I have that the travel case that has a built-in keyboard for the iPad. And so on a plane where you're in a restricted space, the iPad is actually much easier to use for creating presentations and doing work than a full-fledged Mac or laptop.
Well, that's pretty good.
So
I guess that is pretty good. So that's where the space constraints plus the keyboard really makes a...
And the battery life, right? I mean, if I'm on a plane, even, you know, in super battery saving mode, if it's any significant flight, I will burn through a battery on a laptop. I will not on the iPad.
Yeah, it's such a pain for me to do the typing, the editing, that sort of thing. And I guess the Bluetooth keyboard probably helps with that a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But just the selection with my finger, you know, to select the text blocks and move things around. It's just, I am so much faster with a straight keyboard on a laptop.
Yeah. Well, I actually find for moving things around, right, the touch screen on an iPad is much easier to manipulate things than the trackpad mm-hmm. on a laptop.
Yeah, and I'll give you that, and I think the convergence of operating systems and user experience for interface are moving in that general direction. We should expect to see that the vast majority of laptops will have a touch interface as well as the keyboard interface within the next X period of time. So I think there's a convergence there that's very natural, and then that way you're using the right interface and the right method to interact with your data and your applications.
Yeah. Well, speaking of convergence, you had another article that we wanted to talk about of an interesting converged game on Facebook.
Yeah, I did. And this is one of these really strange things that when you think about it at the surface, you know, the initial thought is ugh, or maybe even double ugh. So let me introduce the subject. And it's certainly a sticky subject, isn't it? So
it can be, yes.
There's an application that has been created on Facebook using Facebook as the basis for it. It's called Bang Your Friends. That's the name of the application and the concept.
So just real quick. So we went to dinner last night at the Rockfish or Bonefish Cafe, one of those two names. And they had their Bang Bang sauce on shrimp. So, you know, I don't think we're talking about that in this case.
No, but okay. I'm glad you had a good dinner last night. That actually those shrimp are supposed to be pretty good. I've had them, I think, once. So long story short, the way that this very simple game operates is you have access to your Facebook set of friends, and you are able to select those friends that you might have a romantic interest in, and those people are never, ever, ever notified except if they install the Facebook application and notice that you are among their friends and decide that they are romantically inclined towards you and they select you, and then the application does that matchmaking behind the scenes.
Yeah, this sounds like a great example of a procurement process.
Well, it's an example of any marketplace when you think about it. But the key here that I was really intrigued about is it's a marketplace that preserves the anonymity of the provider and the seller, if you will. You know, the person who's interested in something and the person who wants to provide that something, whatever it might be. In this case, it's all anonymous, and the matchmaking does not happen unless both parties indicate the interest. So that got me to thinking, okay, interesting concept here. What other spaces would that apply to that are new, different, and novel?
Yes.
Right? Because there could be circumstances where you don't want to broadcast something, but it would provide for a more flexible, more easy way of connecting people, businesses, et cetera, if both sides knew the equation. And markets, a lot of markets work in that fashion.
Yeah, you know,
the stock market works that way, for example, right? The stock market is I put a share up for sale. I don't know who's going to buy it, but because the price is right, there is a willing buyer and someone pays for it. I don't know who they are. They don't know who I am necessarily. It's all, you know, one of this great big soup.
Yeah, I was thinking about security testing as an interesting market for this. If I'm a company and I'm concerned that I have security vulnerabilities with my infrastructure, I don't want to necessarily advertise that, hey, I think I have security vulnerabilities for my infrastructure and I don't have the skills on staff to actually test this out. But I do want to, you know, get an appropriate test executed by skilled resources who can actually identify and expose my security vulnerabilities so I can do something about it.
Ah, so very interesting. So you don't want to say, hey, I'm vulnerable, please come attack me.
Right.
But you might want to say, hey, I'm interested in having the service provided to test my security infrastructure by a party who's willing to go do it.
Yes. And so, you know, there's a chance, you know, tying it back to that stock market comment, that if I were to put out a public bid on this, it could have a material impact on my stock price. But if I could do this through one of these markets where both sides are secret until the transaction is completed or agreed to.
And it could still be private between the two organizations in that way. I mean, you don't have to necessarily broadcast that.
Right. I mean, I've put out a bid without saying who I am. Right. I get the bid without saying who I am. We agree that the bid is appropriate and we can do it. We take it all offline, and now I have an appropriate service that's able to test my security infrastructure in such a way that allows me to drive a good business outcome without exposing a potential bad business outcome.
Extremely intriguing. And I'm sure there are other interesting use cases that could work around this as well. So before I roll, because I need to roll. There's another sticky situation that I thought I'd bring up. And that is on the latest version of Simpsons Tapped Out. So Simpsons Tapped Out ended their Valentine's promotion.
Yeah, and they just cut it out. They didn't let me do something with my hearts.
Yes, I was at 47 hearts.
Me too.
Three away from getting whatever that thing was. It was 50 hearts. And poof, they were all gone.
Yeah, what's up with that? What's up with that?
But so that was one little frustrating thing. But there is another little interesting thing.
Yes.
And I don't know if you noticed, but in the Quickie Mart.
Yes.
You're able to buy a lottery ticket,
yep.
Scratch off.
Yep.
And they now have a golden scratch off.
What?
That if you
what? I didn't see the golden scratch off.
I have a picture of this. I can share it with you.
I think we should put it on the show notes for this week.
Yep. So here's the deal. With the golden scratch off, you could pay, I don't remember if it was $1 or $1.99 or something like that. And when you do that scratch off, then you win not coins, but donuts.
Donuts.
So what I liked about this is
I got a golden ticket.
Well, not quite that, but it's an ability to do a little bit of the randomness that we talked about in some of the prior games, a little more stickiness and intriguing to get you in, because now you could gamble your way up to some of the donut prizes so that you could get the secret volcano lair, which no way, no how would I spend money for, because, you know, that's kind of silly and, you know, so what? But you're now more tempted.
Evil. I just opened it up. So they want you to spend $1 of real money.
Yes, yes.
To have a chance of getting 100 donuts.
Yes. And when you play the donut game, the scratch off game, that is the free one, or not the free one, but the ones you spend coins on to play, which
yes.
is the lower tier. And you do the scratch off, and then it shows you what you've won in terms of game coins.
Yes.
It also says at the bottom, you could have won 30 donuts if this were a golden scratch off game. So,
oh, that's evil.
Isn't that intriguing?
That is evil.
All right. Well
I think we're out of time. I think that's our show for today. Don't forget,
we're taking next week off.
We're going to take next week off. And don't forget, you can follow us in lots of different places. We are on Google+. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Stitcher Radio. We're on the iTunes Store. We want your ratings and comments on iTunes. That really, really helps us a lot. Tell your friends about us. Share maybe some of our shows on we're on the Network Blogs app on Facebook, so those things post automatically. Any other interesting places, Michael, that we are?
We are everywhere. Elvis is everywhere.
Elvis has left the building.
Well, there's
bye-bye.
See ya.
Stop. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.